Hey everyone, before we get started, a little news that came our way after we recorded this episode. We are now on iTunes and Spotify. So if you know anyone that gets their podcast through either iTunes or Spotify, let them know about us. And if you are listening to us on iTunes, give us a review. It would really help us out. Also, we have a little bit of a sponsor this week, so I'm going to play that ad right now and then we'll get into the show. Thank you very much.
The longest running live comedy music concert series is almost here.
Everything about this is dumb and so am I. Here we go.
MarsCon is happening February 28th through March 1st at the Hilton Minneapolis St. Paul Mall of America. Featuring the world-famous Dementia Track with performances by Great Luke Ski, Devo Spice, TD's Kyle and Lynn Zilla, Mikey Mason, Mark with a C, Beth Kinderman and the Player Characters, Cornflake, Brett Glass, Carl Brown, Michael William Hunter, Il Nej, and this year's music guest of honor, Lauren Mayer.
Mom's menopausal with a teen in puberty, not a pretty sight to see. Around here no one talks when we can yell, cause we're in hormones.
Plus, Dementia Water Aerobics and Merch at Table 27, Dementia SmackDown Wrestling, and more! Be sure to pick up your copy of the MarsCon 2020 Dementia Track Fundraiser MP3 album with over 4 hours of live music and comedy recorded at MarsCon 2019 for just $20. Visit MarsConDementia.com and click on Shop.
I'm so happy the way that song came out. And I'm absolutely shocked that we put it together in a week and a half.
Registration for a weekend badge is $55 until January 31st, after which the price goes up to $70 at the door. For more info on MarsCon, visit MarsCon.org. Thanks for listening, Funny Music fans, and...
we will see you at MarsCon 2020. Peace.
Audience, leave.
I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. We've been Disney fans our entire lives. And now, as childless adults, we're undertaking a journey through the media that shaped our lives.
Trying to find out if what made them special is still there.
We are Rewatching the Magic.
Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
Before we get started, if you notice any audio issues with today's recording, nothing really can really be helped. We've just spent the last hour trying to figure out what's wrong with the recording equipment here, so we apologize in advance and hope you can still enjoy this episode.
Yeah, we're working on it and we're still growing. Thanks for sticking with us through all the little hiccups.
Yeah, we're still a new podcast, so we're still getting our feet wet in all this. So, but let's move on to today's movie, to save today's discussion, The Lion King, 94. At this point, we're kind of in grade school, middle school, junior high age.
Yeah. Would have been.
Yep. So just to give you, again, showing our ages, as it were, because we're old.
So old.
Yeah. Anyway, so this was, I mean, I remember this movie, loving this movie as a kid. I had the soundtrack on cassette. That shows you my age. I had this soundtrack on cassette.
So did I. I do not believe I would have owned a CD player at this point.
I wouldn't own a CD player until roughly around the time of Hunchback. Because I remember Hunchback was one of the first CDs I ever had.
I can't remember exactly when I got one, but this would have probably been on cassette first, and then I think I re-bought it on CD later.
So let's talk about a little bit of it. We've talked about Tim Rice, who did music work on this movie. He also did work with Aladdin. He just did Aladdin, going into Lion King. We already talked about Tim Rice. Let's talk about the other person who did music on this movie, Mr. Reginald Dwight, better known to the world as Sir Elton Hercules John. You put respect on that name.
Absolutely.
Go see Rocket Man. It's a good movie.
Yeah, and just won some Golden Globes 2 nights ago as we are recording this.
Yep.
So.
So, do you know the story of how, because I couldn't find anything that I could use of how Disney approached Elton John to do this movie?
It was apparently Tim Rice's idea. Apparently, the first, Rice wanted to do a pop song soundtrack instead of a more Broadway soundtrack like they had been doing. With Menken and stuff. And since Menken wasn't going to be available to do Lion King because of other commitments, they asked Rice to find another composer to work with. And Rice's first idea was to get ABBA.
I heard that.
Yeah, so he approached Benny and Björn, who are the creative forces behind ABBA, the two guys. And they had already, you know, had success on Broadway with Chess and other things. They had done some other film scores, I believe, and stuff. So they were a known entity, but also... ABBA is the best pop act in the history of all of humanity. I will fight anyone on that. So it makes
Mamma Mia.
It makes sense. I am a huge ABBA fan. You have no idea. It makes sense that if Tim Rice was going to go in a pop style for people who are already familiar with musicals and film, ABBA was a brilliant first choice. Unfortunately, Benny was already working on a different musical in Sweden. And so Benny couldn't do it, and, you know, they're a duo, so they don't really go anywhere without the other one. So he went to Plan B and approached Elton John. And Elton John wanted to make it a lot like The Jungle Book, it seems. In that he thought that the songs in The Jungle Book was funny, and he thought that it was an all-ages thing. It wasn't too childish, it wasn't too adult. It was that sweet spot that we've talked about before with the Disney Renaissance. Mm-hmm. So that seems to have been where they went with it on at least the songs that they wrote.
Mm-hmm. And they're beautiful songs. They're great songs. Even, you know, the few that ended up getting cut, and we'll talk about those songs that eventually got cut later on, but, you know, they're good songs. And, of course, in a bit of a change, and it's something that was that these Renaissance movies did not do, in that you had someone completely different doing the score, in this case being Hans Zimmer.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about Hans Zimmer?
Hans Zimmer is just an absolute force. He also worked with Disney on the Pirates of the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. So that great, amazing, you know, dum dum da da dum dum da da dum dum da 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 dum. That's also Hans Zimmer. But I mean, he's got Grammys and Oscars out the wazoo for his composing work. Did a lot of work with DreamWorks, and then became the head of their music division thing, music composing section. But he did a lot of TV work in the 80s. He worked on things like Moonlighting. And then in the 90s, he primarily became a film composer. And he's composed so many films that you love. He composed Gladiator and Dark Knight and Inception. So, I mean, he's got a lot of cred in the film industry.
And from what I read, he was primarily brought on because he had the expertise in doing the African-sounding music.
Yeah, he had done a couple of films before this where he had done kind of incorporated African rhythms, and the films, I believe, were set in Africa or had some connection to Africa. I wasn't familiar with either of them when I was doing my research. And then the kind of fourth person in this stew is a musician from South Africa who goes by the name Lebo M.
Yeah, guys, know, even if you don't know the name, you know his voice, because he's just the first voice you hear in this movie.
Yeah, and he did all of the choral arrangements and the chanting and all of the kind of African language, the Swahili and stuff that they put in there. He did all that, and he formed a choir to record all of that. And he's very well known and very well respected in South Africa, especially, but also in Hollywood. And after doing this, he would go on to help with the soundtracks to Congo and Outbreak, both of which were set in Africa, and they wanted a similar African rhythm choral flavor to it. So.
And they brought Lebo M back for the remake.
Yeah.
To do some music for that, and let's just be known that I haven't seen the remake, and I know you haven't seen the remake.
No, not yet. And
coming to Disney Plus at the end of the month, so maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I might have a drunken curiosity night where I put myself through that, but I've not heard good things.
Yeah, so let's talk about the controversy before we get into the movie proper. Because it shares a lot of similarities with a certain Japanese property, and I'll go into more detail about it.
Well, I'm just gonna say that I think we've learned that it wouldn't be a Disney Renaissance picture without an attached controversy.
Yeah,
this is about the fifth one that we've talked about.
Disney is not the most ethical company. We love their product, we love their entertainment, but they're very unethical in some of their business practices.
A giant corporation being unethical? No. I am shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
You know, the persona of Uncle Walt was just that, a persona.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Kimba the White Lion. Kimba the White Lion was a Japanese manga. I almost pronounced that wrong. I'm going to get the otaku on me this way. Kimba the White Lion was a Japanese manga created by Osamu Tezuka in the 1950s. And it was eventually adapted into an anime series in the 1960s. The anime actually did air in the United States in the late 60s. Matthew Broderick was actually quoted as he thought this was an adaptation of Kimba the White Lion when he signed up to do the movie, because he grew up with the old cartoon.
Oh, wow.
Yep. There are comparison videos all over the internet. Just search Lion King versus Kimba the White Lion, and you will see scenes from this anime that are beat for beat scenes from this movie. Even the original artwork of Simba was having him as a white lion. So there's a lot of controversy there. Now, Tezuka died in 1989, which coincidentally is around the time where Disney was starting to get the idea to do The Lion King. At the time, was under the production title King of the Jungle. The title was changed because lions don't live in the jungle. So like I said, it's a bit of a shady situation. The creator of Kimba dies, and not too long after, you get this idea to do a movie about a lion, specifically a white lion. A movie about a white lion that becomes the king of his own pride. I'm just saying, there's a lot of issues there. There was even one of the stories that I heard that, you know, why didn't his family sue? Because it's Disney. You're not going to win a lawsuit with Disney. Disney has the money to hire some of the best lawyers in the world. You're not going to win.
Yeah, I don't know. As we record this, the last I heard, Lindsay Ellis still has an ongoing legal beef with Disney, and we're not sure how that's going to come out over her recent Dumbo video. She did a video about the live-action remake, Tim Burton, called Woke Disney, and it was a sponsored video on YouTube, and part of her contract said that she couldn't run any other ads via YouTube, the AdSense program or whatever. And Disney came along and copyright claimed her video because it did use, albeit in fair use, it did use some footage from Dumbo. And they, instead of taking down the video, they did what most companies do, and they decided to monetize it for themselves, which put ads on her video, which, even though she wasn't directly benefiting from that, did technically violate her contract through no fault of her own, that she had with her sponsor. So last I heard, she was lawyering up and hoping to take on the corporate machine that is the mouse, and best of luck to her.
Yeah.
But
we love Lindsay Ellis on this show.
Yeah, we absolutely do. We stan a legend. She has been great. So yeah, but yeah, like you're saying, most people will not sue Disney because it's, I mean, boy, that's an uphill climb.
It is.
The other, if you don't mind me, while we're talking about this, the other slightly more minor controversy on things Disney did without getting proper attribution is the use of the song Lion Sleeps Tonight. And in that case, the family opted not to sue Disney, but to sue the company that licensed the song to Disney.
Well, okay, Disney did get the song through the licensing, through, you know, the firm. That's kind of what most corporations do.
Yeah.
They don't go to songwriters, they go to the representatives of the songwriters or a record company.
Yeah.
Because 9 times out of 10, it's the record company that kind of owns the song. That's,
yeah.
It's not fair, it's not right.
Yeah. There was something I remember at the time hearing about that, and I think in my research I found that they opted to sue
the record company,
the record company, the licensing company or whatever instead, and the licensing company ended up settling. So I don't know if that was their only legal recourse or if they chose that because it's slightly easier than suing the mouse.
I think they didn't really have a case against Disney since Disney did license the song the right way. It's just that you have the family of the songwriters that are pretty much, you know, we don't want this song, which features an actual chant, African chant on it, to be used in this corporate representation of our culture.
Yeah. Which is fair.
Yeah. So let's get into the Shakespearean elements of the movie. Most people, myself included, would say it's Hamlet with lions. Pretty much. It's almost, again, follows the same similar story of Hamlet. You wanted to talk about something else, a different video about...
Kyle Colgren covered this in his Shakespeare videos that he does on YouTube. Guest starring two friends of ours, Tony Goldmark and Luke Ski. But in his video, he claims that it's more akin to Henry IV. In which there is the kind of young future king, Prince Hal, who is he doesn't really have the gravitas of a king, very much like Simba at the beginning, and through many trials and tribulations eventually gains that. He also has a bunch of kind of goofy and, because it's Shakespeare, drunken friends, Falstaff and his crew, who are very similar to the way that Timon and Pumbaa interact with Simba, things like that. You can go either way, but I will tell you, having done master's level coursework on the works of Shakespeare, Shakespeare reused his themes a lot. So pretty much anything that you can connect to one Shakespeare play, you can legitimately connect to like five other Shakespeare plays, because Shakespeare reused a lot of stuff, which, you know, is not a slight against Shakespeare. Disney also reuses a lot of stuff, and that's not a slight against
a lot of tropes.
Yeah. And the same was true then, so.
So I guess we can skip that, because I had some notes here that kind of made fun of Hamlet. But
Well, no, I mean, I find the comparison to Hamlet to absolutely be legitimate. But I think a comparison to the story of Prince Hal is also equally legitimate. I don't think you have to choose one or the other.
generally Shakespeare inspired, I guess.
It is very Shakespearean in its themes and scope. Yes.
I think that's the one thing Disney did admit, is that they wanted to do something very Shakespearean.
Yeah. And I mean, bravo to them, because I'm absolutely for anything that introduces the works and themes of Shakespeare to a younger audience, or to audiences that may not have been familiar with it.
So Lion King at Disney was seen as a B-level project. The A project was Pocahontas. Everyone wanted to work on Pocahontas. All the main animators, all the main story people, everyone wanted to work on Pocahontas because they thought this was going to be the big hit. This is going to be the one that's going to be the award winner. It's Pocahontas. It's not the Lion King. Which is kind of ironic, because Lion King had the B team working on it. And it's kind of ironic, because Lion King today is a more beloved film than Pocahontas is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lion King. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh no, I'm just saying. I mean, it's, they really did put so much into Pocahontas, because I think they thought that it was going to be more of the Disney princess idea. And Disney has, for a while now, and certainly before the Renaissance even, had this idea that Disney's bread and butter is the princess. So with Aladdin and Lion King, neither of which really had the princess element, I think that they very much considered these the B movies. And both of them turned out incredibly well.
Yeah, so. Lion King would go on to become the highest grossing animated film of all time, only to be overthrown by Frozen.
Yeah.
And only to be overthrown by the remake of The Lion King, only to be overthrown again by Frozen 2.
Yeah.
This war between lions and ice queens is never going to end.
Yeah.
But if you're only counting hand-drawn animation, The Lion King is still the top movie of all time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Straight up. And I think that's all we can say in terms of anything that's not the movie.
Yeah, let's get to the movie.
Let's get to the movie. Lion King, 1994. I watched it on Disney Plus. Did you watch it on Disney Plus?
I also watched it on Disney Plus.
All right, the movie is listed as The Lion King, the Walt Disney Signature Collection. Not Lion King 1994. Now, so it's taken from the recent Blu-ray release, which I do have. I'm looking at it on my shelf. The Walt Disney Signature Collection is pretty much what they're releasing all of the classic movies under these days. So if you see a classic animated Disney movie in the store, like Aladdin or Lion King or Beauty and the Beast, it's going to have that Walt Disney Signature Collection on it. And so this is the Blu-ray version, and it has the current Disney logo. We just talked about last week with Hunchback having the old-school Blue Castle logo. Here's the current CG logo.
Yeah.
So, let's get into the teaser trailer for The Lion King.
Oh, yeah.
A.K.A. the Circle of Life sequence.
Honestly, I think this was the most brilliant marketing move possibly in all of Disney.
Take the first 4 minutes of this movie, and that's the trailer.
Yeah, and I don't think, if you weren't alive, and especially a child at the time, but I remember even my father talking about it. Just imagine being in a theater to see something completely unrelated, and the circle of life hits you, and it is the first time you have ever experienced that.
Did you see this movie in the theater?
I did, yeah.
I did see the re-release 10 years later, though.
Yeah, but I remember this trailer coming up in the theaters. And they tagged it with, like, every major film for, like, a year before. And, you know, you're just sitting there in a theater, and out of nowhere that, like, you know, and you're just, like, that was a punch in the face as a kid. And then that entire sequence is so beautifully animated.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, to this day, you know, still I was watching it for the rewatch, and I was thinking, man, this animation is exactly as gorgeous as I remember.
We were talking last week about, you know, imagine if they had done something like this for Hunchback.
Yeah, I honestly don't think it would have worked as well for Hunchback, and I'll tell you why. Hunchback and Beauty and the Beast and Little Mermaid even, all of those start with an exposition song that sets up the world. But the brilliant thing about Lion King is, especially if you're talking about like a Broadway or a traditional theatrical musical, Circle of Life is the sort of song that would be, like, right before intermission. This would be the absolute, like, crest of the play, musically speaking, in any other context. This is a absolute showstopper. And this is what they choose to start the movie with.
Yeah, and it's so that chant, the you know, that's all in Zulu, written and performed by Lee Boehm. As the entire story takes place in Africa, it sounds very regal because it is about a king. It's very regal, at least to me. It's very regal sounding.
Yeah,
but when you translate that into English, here comes a lion. Oh yes, it's a lion. Very generic.
Yeah. I mean, if you listen back to it and just, you know, imagine the English translation being like, oh, it's a lion. Look, here comes a lion. It's a lion. Daddy, it's a lion. Because that's basically what it means,
yeah.
In the translation. And I'm not sure if the African audience really got the same scope of
yeah,
because there's something, especially when you're like raised as an Anglophone who doesn't speak any other languages, anything vaguely foreign kind of sounds impressive.
It's
especially to a little kid.
Yeah, it's the foreign language is cool mentality. It's, I think every country at some level has that foreign language is cool. That's why if you ever go like to Japan, they're like obsessed with English.
Yeah, and I mean, okay, I get it, because I was that same kind of kid. But yeah, to grow up and to find out that Simba just means lion.
Yeah,
like that's just his name. That's, everybody's just like, hey, lion, come over here, lion, look at the, you know. So yeah, when you know things like that, it does kind of take some of the mystique out of it a little bit, I feel.
This is my cat. His name is Cat. This is my dog. His name is Dog.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So, let's moving on. The various animals gather at Pryrock to witness the presentation of the new lion cub, Prince Simba, son of the King Mufasa. Everyone bows to the future king. Boom, title screen. That's the whole scene. 4 minutes. But it's the song that really makes that scene.
Yeah. And, I mean, you want to talk about the Kimba thing again. That whole circle of life idea is all through Kimba.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, they really weren't keeping that a secret by starting the film with
An entire generation grows up holding things up Rafiki style with baby Simba.
Yeah, you want to talk about the shot. I mean, we didn't really... There really isn't one... In Hunchback, so we didn't really talk about it last week, but Lion King has that one shot and no other.
Yeah.
You know, there is not even a contest for
if
that.
If you haven't held something up like Rafiki does to Simba, you are lying?
Yeah, everybody has held their pet cat. Like, if you've ever owned a pet cat, you have
or
held
their kid.
It up like
I mean,
that.
I've seen parents hold their kid like that.
Yeah. There is that.
But for two old adults who don't have any children, the pet will do.
Yeah, I have held, like, every pet that I can hoist like that at some point.
I want to see you hold your dog like that. I know he's a big boy, but, you know.
I did it when he was a puppy, and he was small enough that I could do that. But he's over 50 pounds now, so I'm not lifting that. So,
So that's the opening of the Lion King. I guess we can, is there anything else you want to talk about that opening scene?
Yeah, this is also one that's kind of, and we are by far not the first to talk about this, of course, but there's some really disturbing kind of political ideas between all of the herbivores and stuff in the jungle being like, oh yes, bow to the thing and hope it won't eat you.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little, you know, I even have in my notes, yes, bow to the thing that will eat you. Bow, peasants, bow to your doom. Which is, you know, I can't help but think of it in that, you know, I mean, when you're, what would have been then, like 11, maybe 12, at the time this came out, you don't really think about it in quite that way. But yeah. As an adult, you're like, no, don't bow, zebra. Run. Run, zebra. Run.
Run, antelope. Run. So I guess we can move on to Scar. We meet Scar, voiced by the legendary Jeremy Irons, lamenting that he will never be king because of the birth of Simba, as he is kind of hunting out a little mouse. And you will never see another light of day. I do. I just love the way Jeremy Irons did that whole opening monologue with Jeremy Irons is just amazing. Because yeah. anything Jeremy Irons says is amazing.
When I love everything Jeremy Irons does, but when he decides he's going to chew some scenery, he is at his absolute best.
And you don't get it. I mean, if you're going to be the villain, you're going to chew some scenery.
Yeah, I mean, he really comes at this like an old school villain. Mm-hmm. But I mean, whenever he decides to go like absolutely incredibly camp with his performances, it just comes across so beautifully.
There's more ham here than Pumbaa.
Yeah. He recently just did the Watchmen TV series and played Ozymandias, and there are many shades of Scar in that, in the way he just kind of camps it up and is the overwhelmingly evil and, you know, haughty kind of guy that is too given to his own sense of intelligence. Mm-hmm. It's very similar in kind of ideas and themes there. And watching that, I was just like, ooh, it's like live action Scar. It was so good.
So let's enter Zazu, voiced by Mr. Bean himself, Rowan Atkinson.
This was probably the first thing I ever experienced Rowan Atkinson in.
Not me, because I believe Mr. Bean was actually airing on HBO at the time. So I was watching Mr. Bean at the time.
Yeah, we didn't get HBO until I was, like, an adult. So, you know,
Bean doesn't talk. So there you go.
Yeah, this, and then I kind of saw a couple of clips of Mr. Bean, and then the next thing I really knew him from was, I believe, Four Weddings and a Funeral. That he was in that one, I believe. So, yeah.
So Zazu's interruption causes Scar to lose the mouse, so he gets to eat Zazu instead.
Hi, Zazu, it was nice knowing you.
Easiest money Rowan Atkinson ever made. No. Enter Scar's brother, Mufasa, voiced by the legend James Earl Jones, Darth Vader himself.
Yeah, cast because they thought his voice sounded like a lion roar.
Well, he was also got the voice for being Darth Vader because his voice sounded deep and booming.
Yeah.
So it pays to have a deep voice, I guess.
Yeah, it does. And the only one of any of these characters to have kept the part for the remake.
Yep. So, because you can't recast James Earl Jones.
Yeah, I dare you to try.
So he saves Zazu from becoming lunch. It's very clear that Scar and Mufasa have a troubled relationship. They are brothers, but they don't exactly get along. Something happened. It's never explained in the film, but these two do not get along. It kind of was explained in the Lion Guard TV show, which we did not talk about how big the Lion King franchise became. You know, the movie gave us two sequels and two TV shows. The TV show, the Timon and Pumbaa show, and the more recent one, The Lion Guard, which follows Simba's second child, Kion, as he becomes captain of the guard. And in the Lion Guard show, it's revealed that Scar was the previous captain of the guard. And it even shows us how these two had their troubled relationship. Pretty much, Scar did everything he could as captain of the guard to gain Mufasa's respect, and Mufasa kind of shoved him to the side. You know, even when he ended up getting his scar from protecting Pride Rock from a rogue lion, he just kind of laughed it off. Oh, I'm going to call you Scar now, and kind of dismissed him, and that's kind of what started Scar's path down to evil.
Also in one of the books, one of the tie-in books.
Yep.
Yeah, I felt so bad for Scar because Scar was not his original name, of course.
His original name wasn't much better.
Oh, no, it was far worse.
Taka. It was Taka, which in Swahili means lesser.
I thought it meant garbage. I had seen it translated at one point as garbage, but yeah, I mean lesser works as well, I suppose, in the thing. But I was like, can you imagine what kind of awful parents were Mufasa and Scar's parents that they were like, here is Mufasa, he will be a great king, and here is garbage. Like, my goodness, you're already setting up your son for a life of supervillainy at that point.
Yeah, so, and there's also a third origin if you want to go by the remake. Apparently, I didn't see the movie remake, but there is something that in the movie that implies that Scar got his scar from Mufasa when he tried to challenge him for king. So you have options. You guys have options in what your origin story for Scar you want to take. So, time passes. Rafiki, voiced by Robert Guillaume, adds a drawing of Simba to his little tree wall. And that's, we won't see Rafiki for a while.
Yeah, but Robert Guillaume, the second actor from Benson to be in a Disney thing, Benson himself in this case.
Yep.
The first one being Rene Auberjonois in Little Mermaid. But yeah, Robert Guillaume, the great Robert Guillaume, who is an excellent actor.
70 sitcom stars in Disney movies.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So we meet Simba, voiced by JTT himself, Jonathan Taylor Thomas, at his most cutest and his biggest of his career. I'm pretty sure Home Improvement started around this time.
Yeah, I think it had already been going for
a bit.
A few years. 1991. So yeah, it was already at the height of his fame. And in fact, I know that the fact that he wanted to go off and do more films after doing Lion King was
the reason he left the show.
Yeah, it was the reason that he left Home Improvement, and he had kind of a fight there with Tim Allen.
Yeah, had a falling out with Tim Allen.
But this absolutely was at the height of his teen heartthrob. Oh my God, everybody loves JTT status.
Were you into the JTT at the time?
Not really. That was my Jonathan Brandis phase.
Ah.
In the same time period, so that was where I was. May he rest in peace. Yeah, I mean, if you were a subscriber to Disney Adventures, was that the name of the magazine?
Yeah.
That Disney had a magazine for kids during the 90s called Disney Adventures. And boy, was every cover for like 6 months around the opening of The Lion King just pictures of Jonathan Taylor Thomas with Simba drawn next to him.
The show, even in Home Improvement, they kind of took a little jabs at Simba with Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Yeah.
There's a Halloween episode where one kid dresses up as Simba, and his character gives him extra candy for being a lion. There's one time where he talks to a little kid who's holding a Simba doll. He says, as someone with experience of playing a lion, I can tell you this.
Yeah. They did put a lot in. I forgot to mention during the talk about Kimba, as long as we're talking about TV shows making fun of Lion King, that did lead to one of my favorite jokes in all of Simpsons history.
Mm.
When the Lisa is...
Oh, yes, that one.
Is seeing Bleeding Gums Murphy in the clouds, and then all of a sudden a version of Mufasa pops up and goes, Kimba, I mean Simba, avenge me!
And then Darth Vader comes up saying, Luke, I am your father.
Yeah.
And then just plain James Earl Jones saying, this is CNN.
Yeah. That,
because James Earl Jones was, he was the voice of CNN back in the day.
He was indeed. In fact, I think he still is. I think that they have the rights to use his voice till the heat death of the universe. But yeah, so Jonathan Taylor Thomas, this was absolutely the biggest teen heartthrob on the planet at the time, at least in the U.S.
Yeah. So we got Simba. He's a little hyper, a little active child, as hyper young children are. The sun's not risen yet. He's trying to get his father awake, and we meet Queen Sarabi, voiced by Mag Sinclair. And I just love that whole sequence. Your son is awake before sunrise. He's your son. And I pretty much every parent would probably have gone through that whole scenario.
Yeah, I mean, I hear a lot of that from friends of, you know.
Yeah.
No.
Childless adults, you guys. Childless adults.
It's your turn to change the diaper or whatever.
Well, I mean, even us as children, Christmas morning, trying to wake our parents up saying, it's Christmas, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So Mufasa gives the Circle of Life speech. You know, everything the light touches is our kingdom. We all part of the Circle of Life. To this day, the term Circle of Life is used. Everyone uses that term, meaning whenever, you know, something that goes around comes around, you know, everything, you know, history repeats itself, Circle of Life. And that's one of the longevities of this movie.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really have trouble with it as a philosophy on its own.
Mm-hmm.
If you broaden it out a little bit into kind of like, you know, all the herbivores have to bow and scrape in hopes that they don't get eaten kind of thing, like, I'm not down with that. But
go ahead.
But as far as a food chain thing, that definitely holds up.
You know, the lions eat the antelope. The antelope, or the lion, when the lion dies, the lion becomes the grass. The antelope eats the grass, and the lion eats the antelope. Circle of life.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much everything, you know, from bacteria on up the food chain, pretty much nothing survives on the planet without the death of something else. Mm-hmm. You know, dead things fertilize the grass. I mean, you know, Mufasa is right. So even herbivores, you know, are still feeding off the death of something else, and it might just be more plant matter, it might be another animal, it might be, you know, but it definitely is, at least, that, you know, unfortunately, no matter how little impact you want to have on the planet, you're still going to have an impact on the planet.
Yep.
Which I think is something that maybe should have been talked about more often in previous generations.
Yeah. So let's move on to one of those cut songs they've talked about. You see, remember when we talked about Beauty and the Beast, how it talked about there was a cut song and they put it back in 10 years later? So for the 10th anniversary of The Lion King, they put a song back into the movie. The Morning Report. this version of it actually comes from the stage production, the Broadway production of The Lion King. And the best way I can describe it is Morning Report is basically dad jokes the song. All animal puns. In the regular version, which is on Disney Plus, you see Zazu, Rowan Atkinson, is doing all these animal puns. I told the elephants to forget it, but of course they can't. Cheetahs never prosper. Now imagine that as a song. And you have The Morning Report. Jeff Bennett does the song on The Morning Report, but only for this one. Because, again, it was recorded 10 years later. And Evan Sicato does the voice for Simba. Again, 10 years later, the original actor was way too old to be recording the song. Again, it's a fun little song. I like it, but I know a lot of people were upset. My big thing for the remake is the fact that we never got John Oliver to sing this song. It is a travesty that we never got John Oliver to sing this song.
It is a travesty whenever John Oliver doesn't get to do anything, in my estimation. I absolutely adore John Oliver. I don't want to say that because I did like a lot of the other actors that was cast in there. But it's like, you know, I don't care as much about Beyonce. I've seen James Earl Jones do Mufasa. Chiwetel Ejiofor is great, but I don't know. But when they were like, and John Oliver is Zazu, I was like, that might be difficult to turn down. But, you know, I kind of hated this even as a little kid because I've never been a big fan of puns. Mm-hmm. And the kind of dad jokey nature of it, I was kind of glad that it was pushed in the back in favor of the pouncing lesson.
Yeah.
So that you only occasionally hear Rowan Atkinson come in with a line here and there. I think if it had been an entire song, I would have absolutely loathed it at the time and probably even now.
So yeah, let's talk about the pouncing lesson. Poor Zazu. Zazu gets so much abuse in this movie. I feel sorry for him. On this rematch, I kind of like, wow, Zazu gets a lot of abuse. He gets pounced on, he gets trampled, he gets locked up.
Well, as an adult, all I could think is, that's what you get for being a monarchist. but yeah, at the time I was like, but Zazu is kind of the, there is the string in children to hate that kind of adult, and you do see it kind of, you know, with Simba and Nala, like, Zazu, we don't want to be around, you know,
he's not fun, he's boring,
because he is a very didactic and straightforward and a bit of a know-it-all.
Very by the book.
Yeah, incredibly by the book character. And, you know, children absolutely kind of hate that, I think, for the most part. There are some children that absolutely love rules and boundaries, and they thrive on that. But I think that quite a lot of children...
The average 90s
really,
kid.
Yeah, especially the average 90s kid, yeah. Because in the 90s, we were absolutely taught that that was the type of adult that we should hate.
Yep.
There were all the, you know, commercials where it was like, adults don't get it, but you're awesome and cool and rad, you know. You know, Will Smith comes out with Parents Just Don't Understand, you know.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. I mean, that was kind of like late 80s, but it was something that we heard as kids, you know. And so I think even more than kind of today, I think children's media today has softened a lot on the idea of parents and adults. But when we were kids, it was all, you know, the wah, 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 wah of the Peanuts adults. It was a nanny on Muppet Babies, who you never saw her face, you know, it was all these kind of, you know, I mean, King Triton, we talked about at length and all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, we got a lot of media reinforcement as kids that adults were,
uncool,
you know, really uncool at best, and something to be ignored and actively fought against at worst.
So let's move on. Hyenas in the Pride Lands. Mufasa's off to deal with that as Simba wants to go off, but Zazu's just saying, hey, you know, let your dad take care of it, and when you're older, you can beat up as many hyenas as you want. So later, Scar and Simba have a little chat. And Scar tells Simba about the elephant graveyard. Ooh, an elephant graveyard. A place I'm not supposed to go? Ooh, that's... Like in any normal 90s kid, like, ooh, I'm going to do what they tell me not to do.
Also, an elephant's graveyard just sounds kind of awesome. I'm kind of, you know... Simba is an absolute insufferable brat until, like, halfway through the movie. But elephant's graveyard sounds cool. I'm down.
So Simba's up to tell his best friend Nala, voiced by Nikita Kalame. I'm pronouncing that right, because she doesn't have a Wikipedia page. So Simba saying that they're going to the water hole, and then they can go as long as Zazu with them. But this whole scene is hilarious, mostly because of, you know, coming back as an adult, looking at Nala's mother giving her the bath is just. To me, it was hilarious. And then just Simba just getting grabbed by Sarabi and just getting lifted. He just does not want to... He doesn't want to be embarrassed by his mom.
Yeah, mom, you're messing up my mane. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, typical 90s kid. So, through Zazu, we find out that Simba and Nala are betrothed, destined to be married. The kids don't like this because kids, you know, oh... Girls are icky, germs, cooties, and, you know, that stereotype, because the 90s. Simba plans on changing this when he gets to become the king, which leads us to, I just can't wait to be king! Jason Weaver performs the singing voice for Simba here, and Laura Williams performs the singing voice for Nala. And Simba sings about him, what he wants to do when he's the king. He's a king, doesn't know the responsibilities, he thinks it's fun to be the king. King can do whatever he wants. It's a little fun little song here of this little kid just saying how cool it's going to be when he gets to be the king and how he will do whatever he wants. And more Zazu abuse.
Yeah. I honestly think that in this kid doesn't quite understand adulthood vein, that Disney has gotten a lot better at it. Because I would hold up... It'll All Make Sense When I'm Older, or whatever the song is called from Frozen 2, as being kind of a way better version of this song. And one that's probably better for kids to hear, if I'm going to be honest. Because when I was a kid, I absolutely loved I Just Can't Wait to Be King. And as a song, it is catchy. And the lyrics are a little bit too punny for me, you know, because it's still got a lot of those animal puns in there. Mm-hmm. But as an adult, I find this song absolutely just completely insufferable. Mm-hmm. Because I want to go, shut up, you brat.
it's a change from, I mean, that's kind of why I wanted to do this podcast, because it's like seeing the movie when you're a kid and seeing this movie when you're an adult and having those different perspectives, you know? It's like, you know, like we were talking with Little Mermaid, you know, when you're a kid, oh yeah, Ariel, do the thing. And then when you're an adult, Ariel, you're still a kid yourself. Shut up.
Yeah. And I absolutely, my opinion on child Simba has absolutely changed as I've become an adult. Because it is the perspective of a bully. If you break it down into its complete parts, and I mean, sorry if I'm ruining your childhood here, but not that sorry. This is absolutely the perspective of a bully. I want to have power over you. I want to be able to make you do anything that I want. I want to be able to do whatever I want without consequence. Without supervision. I do not want to have to listen to advice from anybody except myself. If this is sounding a little familiar, it probably should in a scary way.
Honestly, in this rewatch, it's very much, this is Scar's mentality as well.
Yes, it is absolutely the same thing that drives Scar at this point. And
especially later in the movie, skipping ahead a bit, where Scar says, I'm the king, I can do whatever I want.
Which is exactly what Simba says to Zazu, you know, or to Mufasa. You know, you're the king, you can do whatever you want. And Mufasa is the good leader, of course, because Mufasa understands that you shouldn't do just whatever strikes you on a whim. You've got to think about other people. But both Scar and Simba at this point in his life are very narcissistic in their own way of thinking. And it comes up again, you know, in Be Prepared, not to skip ahead too much, but, you know, Scar talks about, you know, it's mostly going to be me, but you'll get some scraps, you know?
Yeah.
And this is kind of what Simba does. And then when the song ends and he's like, haha, my plan worked. And Nala's like, your plan.
Yeah.
You know?
My plan. Yeah, but I pulled it off.
Yeah. And,
oh, you made this? No, I made this.
And when you're watching that as a kid with no real kind of understanding of the larger world, it comes off as a cute, funny scene. And, of course, who wouldn't want to be king? Why would you want to wait to be king? You get to do whatever you want. You get to eat ice cream for dinner. You get, you know, all these childish ideas, not realizing that that is absolutely the perspective of the same kid that beats you up and steals your lunch money every day at school.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to be grown up. I get to do this. I get to stay up as late as I want. I get to eat anything I want at any time I want. No one's going to tell me what to do. You know, it's a typical kid, you know. That's, or at least the 90s kid, I guess. That's the way best way to describe it.
I think it's the idea that things will get better. And when you're a kid, you don't have much understanding of better other than the tiny little freedoms of, you know, getting extra dessert or staying up an hour later or, you know, the little things. You know, I'm going to buy all the Lego that I want, you know. I did that as an adult too, where I was like, I never had Lego as a kid. I am going to buy all of the Lego in the world. and it sits in a box because I have nowhere to display it in my house. Yeah. So I do own all of the Lego from a certain, you know, for a certain few year span. And it just kind of sits there because I don't have anywhere to build it and put it.
Being an adult sucks, kids.
Being an adult sucks. I suggest that you run away to Neverland and never grow up.
Yeah.
Or do what our generation tried and failed to do, which is try to make adulthood less awful. And hopefully if you make it that far, you will not come up against as much pushback as our generation did.
All right, let's get back to the movie. Let's get back to the movie before we go make this completely depressing. So with Zazu ditched, the Cubs do a bit of roughhousing, and Nala beats Simba. Nala actually is a better fighter than Simba is. She proves herself here. Twice.
Yeah, because when has Simba ever had to fight for anything?
It's true.
And Nala, I mean, just as part of, you know, kind of lion culture, the lionesses are the primary hunters. So she's probably being trained in hunting tactics. So, yeah.
But now they've reached it, the elephant graveyard. And Zazu is caught up, but it's too late. Enter the hyenas. Shenzi, voiced by Whoopi Goldberg. Banzai, voiced by Cheech Marin. And Ed, voiced by Jim Cummings. Jim Cummings keeps popping up.
Oh, yes. And we will talk about Jim Cummings and his brilliance a little more in a second.
Jim Cummings is a great voice actor, and we'll talk about it later.
Yeah. The coolest thing about this then and now is how well the animators got Whoopi Goldberg as a hyena into that artwork.
Yeah.
Because that Shenzi looks so much like Whoopi Goldberg in all of her facial expressions. Like, you take any freeze frame of Shenzi and you could put it next to a photo of Whoopi making the exact same facial expression.
Well, the way Disney does it is that they actually filmed the voice recording process for that reason.
Oh, yeah, and but some of it are better than others.
Yeah.
You can't really, like, with Timon and Nathan Lane, they do really well. But even with Cheech Marin, you know, it's not, if you freeze-framed that, you wouldn't immediately go, like, oh, that's Cheech.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have that kind of, but I think Whoopi Goldberg is such an expressive person that her facial expressions are so easy to translate in some ways, because she does have that, you know, just gigantic smile and, you know, the way her eyes move and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, and I think the hyenas get a song in the stage production. If it was my choice, I would have taken that song from the musical instead of Morning Report. Could you imagine, you know, Whoopi Goldberg and Cheech Marin singing a song about eating lion cubs?
Yeah, that'd be great. I would love everything about that.
So the hyenas, they don't like trespassers on their land, and Simba's not afraid because he's a overconfident kid. And he, you know, repeats what Zazu said about the hyenas being stupid, you know? Ixnay on the Oopits Day. I love that line.
Yeah, who you calling Oopits Day?
Apparently they have pig Latin in the African savannah.
Yeah. Well, they got a lot of pigs.
Yeah, it's true. The hyenas chase the cubs and Zazu. Zazu gets caught and into the birdie boiler. Not the birdie boiler!
Which you gotta wonder, how many times has this happened to Zazu that he already immediately knows what they're gonna do and is dreading it?
Zazu gets a lot of abuse. Maybe he's just used to the abuse.
Yeah, maybe that's a favorite lion game back at home. Who knows?
Maybe when he was young and the other lions would pick on him. So the Cubs are cornered, but luckily Mufasa comes in to save them, but he's not happy. And neither has Scar. His plan to have Simba killed failed. So we get we are skipping here, but you know, because there's really not much to talk about the scene. Mufasa and Simba, they have their talk. A king doesn't go looking for trouble. And how, you know, you're the king, you're never scared. I was scared today, and he was scared of almost losing Simba. And then we get the stars of the great kings of the past speech. And then, you know, all you have to do is look to the sky, see the great kings of the past, and you'll never be alone. Because Mufasa knows he's not going to be around forever. He's and trying yet, to... But
this scene is absolutely made by the Hans Zimmer score.
Yeah.
That, like, ah, you know, like, in the background, you're like, that would have not been such a profound scene, I don't think, without that score in the background, because that score just kind of rips your heart out.
Yeah, because, you know, Simba's saying, oh, we're going to be together forever, and you could see the, with the music and the look on Mufasa, that, you know, one day I'll be gone.
Yeah, that's how you becoming king works, you little brat.
Yeah.
You know, I have to die, and then you become king.
There's no retirement plan for kings. Though they try to do that in some of the other movies, but it doesn't really work that way.
Yeah.
This isn't a Princess Diary situation.
Yeah.
So, meanwhile, at the hyena's lair, Scar is disappointed that they didn't get the job done. And it's my favorite line that Scar has. I have it on a t-shirt. I'm surrounded by idiots.
Yes.
That was I've always loved that line from Scar, and for Christmas, my brother got me a shirt with Scar on it, and it says, I'm surrounded by idiots on it, and I love that shirt. New plan! Kill Mufasa! Song! Be prepared! This is where we're talking about Jim Cummings, because Jeremy Irons blows out his voice in the recording of this song. And if you listen really, really, really hard, you can tell when it happens.
Well,
because there's some talk, because Jim Cummings does fill in. There's talk that he didn't do any of this song, and Jim Cummings was the entire song.
Yeah, it is debatable how much of this is Jim Cummings. But even if it's a mix of the two, I honestly dare anybody to pinpoint it. Because in having talked, in having done interviews with both Jeremy Irons and Jim Cummings in years since, neither of them seems to be that sure who is who.
Jim Cummings does a very good Jeremy Irons impression.
Jim Cummings does a very good everything. But yeah, this is one of the reasons why I wish that Disney would kind of work more with trained voice actors. Mm-hmm. There is such a massive difference between the way you have to treat your voice when you are just acting in a movie, because you get a lot of downtime between scenes, as they set up cameras, as they set up lights, as they, you know, check on things, move things, redo costumes, all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of downtime on a typical movie set. There is not in a recording booth.
Mm-hmm.
A recording booth is an absolute sprint to the finish that can last for hours. And this is why Jeremy Irons, trained theater actor, blew out his voice doing this.
In my rewatch, I noticed Jim Cummings during the final chorus. Like, prepare for the coup of the century. That is Jim Cummings, no doubt. But as a kid,
did you ever once think that was two voices?
No, because they didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
They kept that hidden. And they kept that hidden for a very long time. Over 20 years, they kept that hidden.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that, you know, when you're trained to do this kind of vocal gymnastics, I'm not saying it's easy, but you can absolutely sustain it for longer with the proper training. It can be dangerous to your vocal cords.
Yep.
In a permanent sense. To do this without kind of knowing what you're doing. And that's why I don't always like the fact that Disney has started doing this stunt casting with, you know, just kind of regular film actors, because I don't think they take it as seriously. And not only does that come across in the performance, but that could impact their entire career.
Yeah.
So, you know, please, 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 please use more trained voice actors, or at least get some trained voice actors to train your stunt cast, you know?
Yeah.
This is, and this is why using Broadway actors who are used to singing as well benefits a Disney movie like this. Because Nathan,
they're doing this night after night after night after night.
Yeah, they already know these tricks that are very similar to what trained voice actors use. So they don't typically have as much problem coming into that setting and maintaining that over that long of a period. But, yeah, I feel bad for Jeremy Irons in that, and I'm glad his voice recovered from that, because that could have been much worse. I've heard some absolute horror stories, yeah. Even from trained voice actors over things that have happened. But Jim Cummings, this is probably my second favorite voice acting story from The Lion King. I'll talk about my first one in a bit, but. Jim Cummings being able to just step in and be like, oh yeah, I can absolutely be a perfect Jeremy Irons on the fly is probably one of the greatest
Which
things.
Which is the best option, because you would think that they would get Frank Welker to do Ed, because that's his expertise, his animal voices. And yes, Frank Welker is in this movie.
But he was doing more important things.
He's not credited, but he's in the movie.
I said we'll get to that later.
Okay, okay.
On a similar Frank Welker front, how many characters does Jim Cummings have in this movie? Three. He was Ed. He is the mole that talks to Zazu during the morning report. Mm-hmm. And then he was the stunt scar. So, yeah.
There we go.
So when Frank Welker is busy doing other things, Jim Cummings steps up.
So the new plan, kill Mufasa, kill Simba, Scar becomes king, and he gives some help to the hyenas.
Yeah. Also, hello, incredibly fascist scene.
Yeah, there's a whole scene where you have goose-stepping hyenas.
Yeah, goose-stepping hyenas is very... And it's not just that they goose step, but if you look, they also have where they turn their heads in sync to face the deer leader and stuff, which is, ooh, that's chilling if you have watched enough propaganda from certain regimes. So the animators really did a terrifying job. In that, in the color scheme, in the way everything is set up, they were absolutely drawing from some very particular and infamous propaganda footage.
So let's move on from the fascism for a bit. Let's go to the next day. Scar takes Simba into a gore, saying there's a surprise from his father there, and that maybe he should work on his roar. Meanwhile, the hyenas are by some wildebeests, waiting for the signal for Scar to force the herd into a stampede. So Simba works on his roar, and it echoes in the gorge, and here comes the wildebeests. So Simba thinks he's caused it with his roar, but it's really the hyenas leading them by snapping at their legs. Scar tells Mufasa, and he races to save Simba. Charging through, Mufasa saves Simba, but is dragged by the herd. He leaps, he climbs the rocks, but he's met by Scar. Everyone knows this scene. Everyone.
The Scar. Scene that traumatized an entire generation.
Scar, brother, help me. Long live the king.
fling him off. Flings, Scar flings Mufasa off, and he's trampled to death by the herd. Yes, every 90s kid gets traumatized by this scene. The perfect thing is Jonathan Taylor Thomas's no when he's yelling it. That's also chilling.
And his acting in the next scene. Because he was such a kind of like, you know, one, a child actor, and two, the teenage heartthrob. People really forget that Jonathan Taylor Thomas is a very good actor when he is given material to work with. A lot of the movies that he did when he started doing movies were kind of these, like, you
family
know,
comedies, yeah.
Yeah, really ridiculous fluff nonsense movies that nobody really remembers. But when he actually had some dramatic stuff to play with, and some of it came up on Home Improvement.
I remember the episode where they thought his character had cancer.
Oh yeah, and he had absolutely brilliant performance in there. But in this, you know, when Simba starts realizing that his dad's not getting up.
Yeah, the first was like the denial, like, Dad, get up, we have to go home.
Yeah, and he does the same move that he did in the morning, you know, the pulling on his ear, come on, we're going to go, and, you know, everything about that scene in the way that it is performed is absolutely brilliant, and all credit to Jonathan Taylor Thomas for pulling that off, especially at that age, too.
Yeah.
And it's a brilliant and moving scene still, you know, still in the rewatch, I'm tearing up a little bit, you know. Yeah.
Well, if you've ever lost a parent, you know the pain.
Yeah, and this was, I saw this in the theater about 2 years or less, depending on when it came out, June. So, yeah, less. It had been about a year and a half after I lost my own mother. And this, I mean, I was an absolute wreck in the theater. I'm not sure that I stopped crying until well after Hakuna Matata, to be honest. I absolutely love Disney movies, but one of the more recurring traumas of my childhood was the fact that every Disney movie has the dead parent theme, which happened at the exact wrong time in my life.
Yep.
And this was a big one, because instead of it just being like the parent isn't there, you actively get to see the parent die.
Yeah.
Which in, you know, I mean, nobody knew that was coming, you know, and I felt so bad for my father, because it's like you take your kid to see a Disney movie and then it's like, oh, my child is re-traumatized thanks to, you know, so, yeah.
Faith Katzenberg?
Yeah. Well, just thanks Disney in general, because, I mean, it goes back, this absolutely was a replay of Bambi's mom.
Yeah. The modern Bambi, or modern for the 90s, anyway.
Yeah.
So, let's Scar tell Simba it was his fault. You know, you killed your father. You know, if you hadn't done what you'd done, they wouldn't have been stampeded, and your father would still be alive. Tomes will run away, never return. You cannot show your face to the pride, knowing that you killed your father, only to sick the hyenas on him. The coldness in Jeremy Irons' performance when he's saying kill him.
Yeah, Jeremy Irons is an excellent villain, and you know, has proven over and over again with probably 3/4 of his acting jobs being
typecasting.
Yeah.
So, but Simba's able to get away. He runs through the thorns, the briar patch, or whatever it is, and just gets out of there. And hyenas, he gets away from the hyenas. Hyenas says if he ever comes back, they'll kill him. Scar takes the throne as king and announcing the new union with the hyenas, much to the dismay of everybody in Pride Rock.
And, you know, they tried to explain this, I hear, in the remake, that the reason the hyenas aren't liked, and also the reason what happens to the Pride Lands happens to the Pride Lands, is because hyenas are greedy and they don't know when to stop hunting. But this is not explained at all in the original film.
Well, the way I got it was, like, they have their land, we have our land now, and never the two shall meet. And then he's trying, and then Scar comes in and says, "Oh yeah, we're going to work with the hyenas now." But we don't want, you know, it's more of a xenophobic thing than anything.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing is, I even in my younger days, maybe not when the movie first came out, but as I started getting a little older and, you know, rewatches and stuff, I was like, man, you know, this is guppy racism all over again.
It's yeah. Like,
why are you so, even if they are, they have their own kingdom and we have ours, so what? They have their own kingdom. Let them do what they want in their own king, you know. And you're right. It comes across as very xenophobic without any kind of... And even that, like, well, we don't like them because they overhunt and they deplete the resources and stuff like that is a bit not great of an explanation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the hyenas are kind of problematic, and they were problematic at the time. I mean, that was another one of the minor controversies, is that
the representation of hyenas?
Well, no, the fact that you've got a primarily white cast.
Yeah, voicing a lot of African animals.
Voicing a lot of African animals, but then... Who voices the disgusting, horrible hyenas? It's a black woman and a Latino man.
Yeah.
And the only Latino in the movie, I think, as well. So, I mean, like, you know, and they get called stupid and disgusting and ugly. Like, all the kind of things they're called throughout the movies that the rest of the animals aren't really caught. I don't know. It just, a lot of people had problems with it. So
let's get back to the movie. Rafiki, here in the news, just sadly smears that picture of Simba. Just, you know, Simba's dead. There goes my plan. There goes, you know, this prophecy of whatever it was.
Yeah, which we are also not quite clear on in the context of the film.
Yeah, it's never explained.
Yeah.
In the wasteland, this desert wasteland, Simba has passed out and is being picked on by buzzards. Enter Timon, Nathan Lane, and Pumbaa, Ernie Sabella. Oh, boy.
Absolute brilliant casting.
Perfect casting, yeah, perfect casting. But, you know, we were talking about this last week with Hunchback. It's like, you know, you had the genie, and the genie... Oh, man, we have one genie. We have, you know, one guy. Everyone loves the genie. Let's have two with Timon and Pumbaa. Oh, everyone loves Timon and Pumbaa. Let's have three with the gargoyles.
Well, this is kind of based on the casting and what happened there. Because Ernie Sabella wanted to audition for the hyena, one of the hyenas.
And Nathan
Lane had originally come in for, like, Zazu, I think.
I can see it.
And they were there because they had come in together because they were working on Broadway at the same time and they were already friends. Mm-hmm. And so I think they took, like, a flight out to L.A. together or something to go audition. But anyway, they came in to audition together, but for completely different parts. And because the hyenas are a group affair, they asked Nathan Lane if he wouldn't mind reading for a hyena with Ernie Sabella, just so Ernie's audition would have somewhere to play off of. And apparently they started ad-libbing and just making jokes with each other because they're friends and they had already been working on stage. And apparently it made the animators laugh so much, or the casting directors laugh so much, that they were like, what about if we gave them these other characters, and then I think the roles of Timon and Pumbaa kind of grew a little bit from the actors rather than it being like, hey, let's cast these goofy characters. And then, like, they were supposed to be a little bit of comic relief, but I think it grew a lot just because Nathan Lane and Ernie Sabella have such a great rapport.
So, I'll take that. So they take Simba in. He's an outcast. They're outcasts. When the world turns it back on you, you turn your back on the world, and they raise him in their lifestyle of Hakuna Matata. Oh, that's our next song.
Hakuna Matata?
Hakuna Matata. It means no worries.
It does?
Yeah. So Hakuna Matata is pretty much laying around eating bugs, apparently.
Yeah. Which is interesting because meerkats are really the only one of those three that would eat bugs that much. I think warthogs might a little, but they are primarily herbivores.
Definitely not healthy for a lion to eat.
Yeah, so definitely Simba would not have grown up to be a big strong lion on that diet, let me tell you. It's like the Futurama where they try to feed the lion tofu and it's just coughing up dust. Yes. All cats are obligate carnivores, and they need high amounts of animal protein. Do not try to feed your cat a vegan diet. Thank you. Anyway, this is probably this is definitely the earworm of the movie.
Yeah.
This is the one that's going to get stuck in your head if any of them are.
Yeah, it's just catchy, and it just repeat the chorus over and over so many times. It's there's no way it's not going to get in your head.
Yeah, just that chanting of Hakuna Matata, Hakuna Matata. Hakuna. Yeah.
We get backstory on Pumbaa, but no backstory on Timon. We would have to wait two sequels for that.
Yeah, but you know, our only backstory on Pumbaa is just a long.
Fart joke, yeah.
Yeah, which I could do without, even 90s. Though Ernie Sabella really sells it.
90s, and it's funnier that they centered the word fart than what they ended up doing in the remake, which that on the soundtrack straight up says the word fart.
Yeah, I have seen that one clip of them singing that song, and it was, yeah, you know. Sometimes it's in what you don't say or show that makes the joke.
Yeah.
Remember that, kids.
Of course, this is the first time Disney really does a fart joke in one of their big movies.
Yeah. But this song is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Again, Elton John. And Tim Rice.
Yeah, but I mean, everything about this just comes together. It's good lyrically, but it's got just a super catchy beat.
Yeah.
If I had to listen to, you know, any song from The Lion King on repeat a bunch, it would be Hakuna Matata.
Yeah.
It's by far my I don't know if my favorite, because Be Prepared is a really good song, it's either that or Hellfire that gets my best Disney villain song. I'm not sure which.
Depends on the day, huh?
It depends on the day, but this song, just as far as like the song I want to walk around singing, it's this one.
So, yeah, and we see the passage of time as we see Simba grow into an adult lion with the singing voice of Joseph Williams. They're still living that carefree lifestyle.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, if all Simba did was eat bugs and worms, he would not be that big. He probably
okay.
Would be dead.
So, since you already mentioned him, absolutely how blown was your mind when you discovered who Joseph Williams was?
I'm still confused. I mean, honestly, didn't really know.
Oh my God, do you not know?
I don't think so, no.
This is the son of John Williams.
Oh, wow.
That John Williams. And he is also the lead singer off and on for the band Toto, most famous for the song Africa, even though he is not the one you hear in the original recording. That was a different one. But yes, the singing voice of adult Simba is John Williams' son. He also helped write the lyrics for both the Ewok song and the Cantina Max Rebo song in Star Wars. He helped his dad with that.
Disney and Star Wars. It was always meant to be.
Yeah. But yeah, so there you go. There is your absolutely mind-blowing fact, if you didn't know that adult Simba, John Williams' son.
In the passage of time, though, has not been kind to the Pride Lands. It's dried up. There's no food. There's no water. It's a bad time to live in the Pride Lands. Scar is king. Zazu is prisoner. And it's actually one of the earliest moments of Disney making fun of themselves, with Zazu singing It's a Small World and Scar just shutting him up.
Yeah, it's hard to remember because Disney does it so often now. You know, I mean, they've actually devoted whole movies to deconstructing their own tropes at this point.
Frozen!
Enchanted, you know, I mean, all that. But
yeah.
But Disney used to not allow you to make a joke about the company at all, ever. They took themselves very seriously.
It's our brand. You cannot insult the brand. And then here's them making fun of. I mean, that was one of the big jokes of how annoying the It's a Small World joke is. How creepy the little dolls are in the ride.
My father was, I had to beg him to take me on It's a Small World when I was a kid, because before I was born, he went to Disney, he actually went to Disney very early on, right after it opened in Florida, because he lived, you know, we always lived in the South and not too far, but he went there and he and a group went on It's a Small World, and the ride broke down.
So he had to keep hearing that song?
So they were stuck in there for like an hour or something, listening to It's a Small World on repeat, stuck in a boat in the middle of It's a Small World. Because all the animatronics were still going, all the music was still going, everything was still going except for the boat. And to this day, my father visibly cringes whenever It's a Small World gets brought
up. So I can see how that one's done when you're in the theater and Zazu starts singing that and Scar just goes, no, not that. Anything.
Yeah,
that.
My father loved that joke. He was like, absolutely. Death to that song. No more that song.
And then ends up singing Lovely Bunch of Coconuts.
Which is great, and a brilliant kind of little British joke there, you know, the two Brits singing Lovely Bunch of Coconuts.
So the hyenas are hungry, the lionesses won't hunt, and Mufasa's name is banned. It's a bad time to live in the Pride Lands. And that's really all that scene. It's just that Disney making fun of themselves and the hyenas are hungry.
Yeah.
So let's go back to adult Simba, now voiced by Matthew Broderick. Oh, Ferris Bueller himself.
Yeah, and this
Matthew
is
Matthew Broderick
interesting...
and Nathan Lane. I think that would be good in a musical, don't you think?
Yeah, and that's the other thing is that as much as Joseph Williams nailed it, and also it's awesome having Joseph Williams in the movie, Matthew Broderick can sing, you guys. To be fair,
he never really did any singing prior to the producers.
Yeah, but it was one of those things of, I know that Disney, at least in the past, and after this even, because we didn't really talk about it in Hunchback, but they really did try to see if, you know, if they had to get a different singing voice for Esmeralda or not. And It is my understanding that they do typically have their actors do a vocal test for singing to see if they have to cast somebody else. So I don't know if, like, Matthew Broderick after this went and took singing lessons, like, prior to the producers or whatever. And I'm also not saying that Matthew Broderick is the greatest singer in history, because there definitely are better. But Matthew Broderick can sing. I mean,
I think it was more of, you know, you would have to pay him more, and Disney's not going to pay Matthew Broderick more. Because in the sequels, he doesn't sing in the sequels either.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, a little bit of spoiler, Lion King 2, that's Cam Clark singing all of Simba's songs.
Yeah, I so, mean, I'm always very, I don't know, both confused and annoyed by how rights things work and pay scales work on that.
I mean, not to get off track or even, you know, but, you know, not to bring it up, but when Michael Jackson did The Simpsons, he didn't sing on that. And that was because they would have to pay him more to sing. So they had a stunt singer come in who sounded like Michael Jackson to do those songs.
There are just some bits of Disney history that if I had a TARDIS, I would go back in time and be in the room for. Like, I want to know who says, like, okay, we need a giant burly beast man with a booming voice. Let's cast Robbie Benson. You know, it's like, and I also want to be there when they're like, should we get this Broderick kid to sing? Nah, let's get the lead singer of Toto. I think I worked with his dad once. Like, I want to be there when these sorts of decisions are made, because there is something so beautifully absurd about how some of these things coalesce in my brain that they're probably not as funny in the reality. It was probably just like, oh, it turns out Robbie Benson can deepen his voice, and we found that out now. But it's,
Matthew Broderick wanted too much money to sing. We're not going to have to.
Yeah, it's probably something ridiculously boring. But in my brain, there's like a whole, you know, SNL skit that takes place with these things.
So let's get back to the movie here. So they look at the stars, and Simba gives the same speech that Mufasa gave of the great kings of the past. And Timon and Pumbaa kind of laugh it off. You know, oh, a bunch of royal dead guys are looking at us. Yeah, you know, that's, who told you that joke? And, you know, Simba walks away disappointed because, you know, they insulted his father. You know, one of the last things his father ever told him, you know. It's very depressing.
Yeah.
And he just goes away to a, like, little cliff area, lays down, and kicks up dust. Controversy!
All of the controversies of Lion King!
So, the special effects of The Lion King was done by a company called SFX. And they were not going to get credit in this movie. They were going to make their credit. So, they had the dust spell SFX.
Someone for, like, thought, all of two frames.
Yes.
Which
they wanted
what, like, you know,
not even a second.
Yeah, 24 frames a second, and two frames of that is SFX.
So someone thought it said SEX. Oh no, Disney is putting subliminal messages in our children's minds to have them think about sex. Oh no, there's no subliminal message. That comes in the next song, kids.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And that was one of the things I was thinking about, was why wasn't this scene the controversy? You know?
Yeah.
The next song. Why was that not the controversy instead
we'll
of this?
Get to it. So on the Blu-ray version, on the version on Disney Plus, that's gone. It's just a regular the wind blowing up the dust. And the wind blows the dust straight to Rafiki for some reason. Showing that Simba is alive. How he got that from dust, I don't know. Magic.
I think the fruit that he's eating had fermented, and he's just drunk.
Simba's alive. Update that picture. Update Simba's Facebook picture.
Yeah. New profile pic. Who dis?
It is time. Time for what, Rafiki? You're not telling us anything. So we go back to the trio. We get the lion who sleeps tonight. We already talked about that. Pumbaa end up wandering off and getting hunted by a lioness. But Simba's there to save the day. The lion pins him. Third time. It's Nala. Now voiced by Moira Kelly. And Nala is very surprised that Simba is alive because she was told that Simba was dead. This means Simba is king, but Simba doesn't want to be the king. Not after what he did. No, I can't go back. No. But now the two want to be alone, shooing off Timon and Pumbaa. They see they miss each other. They snuggle up. Timon knows what's going on. Timon is not a dumb guy. He knows exactly what's going on. Which leads us to, can you feel the love tonight? The big love song from the movie. And what's the big single? Because Elton John sang it.
Yeah. Pretty much the only time the pop song version of the song in the Disney credits actually makes sense.
Yeah.
Because you can't have Elton John write the music and not have him sing.
On the soundtrack, he actually sings most of the songs. He sings Circle of Life, Can You Feel the Love Tonight, and there's a version of I Can't Wait to Be King.
Yeah, and they're all good, but I mean, they're not in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sally Dworsky is the singing voice for Nala, even though it's all inner monologue, but we'll just go with it.
Is that what you took that as? Because I just took that as being the same people that sang Circle of Life. It's like a weird Greek African chorus.
Well, it's very specific to the characters, so I think it's just inner monologue. Potato, potato. So Simba can't tell Nala about the past. Nala knows Simba hiding something, but doesn't know what it is. And the two just enjoy hanging out. They haven't hung out in for however many years it's been. And they start tumbling around, and then Nala gives the bedroom eyes.
Boy, does Nala give the bedroom eyes.
Disney, turning on your furry king since 1973.
Is that when Robin Hood came out?
Yes.
Robin Hood is absolutely the reason why there are so many furries right now.
We love you, furries. We love you guys.
They are not subtle at all in the rolling around in the grass scene.
And the little lick / kiss right before the bedroom eyes.
Yeah, although the look they give to Simba as he's like, that was a brilliant bit of animation. I absolutely love that.
Oh, this is where we're going now. So, you form your own conclusion, kids. We're keeping this thing PG.
Even though Disney tried not to.
Yeah, again, like you said, why isn't this scene the controversy? So Nala tells Simba what happened with Scar as the king, and Simba will not go bad. He won't go back. Excuse me. I misspoke here.
I just love the idea of Simba breaking bad, walking back into the Pry Lands and being like, you don't understand, Scar. I'm the one who knocks.
More like, I'm the one who roars.
Yeah.
So he won't go back. And, well, this date sure went south. This date was going so well until, Simba had to open his mouth.
Yeah.
So Simba walks off and meets up with Rafiki. And Rafiki knows who Simba is and says Mufasa is alive. He lives in you. And He Lives in You is a whole nother song from the musical that they put in the sequel.
Yeah.
Though I think that the song would have fit in here, honestly.
Yeah. This honestly does have one of the best morals in a Disney movie, but...
It can hurt, but you can, lay on it or learn from it.
It's such a tiny little scene, but it is such a great scene, and Robert Guillaume does it so well. Where, you hit him on the head and why'd you do that? It's in the past, but it still hurts. Yeah, past can hurt. Which I think is an excellent moral, and maybe should have been in the movie more.
Yeah, you can learn from the past. You know, that's more people needed to get the message on that scene. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
So we meet the ghost of Mufasa, and he tells Simba to take his place as king, to take his place in the circle of life. You know, you are my son, the one true king. Remember who you are. Is that like that one line didn't really make sense. Like, he didn't forget who he is. He's just doesn't want to be that. But you know, death. You know, he's a deadline. Who don't know? Who knows?
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird up in the stars. It's very strange. The other thing that was really kind of painful to me as a kid is Simba chasing the cloud.
Yeah.
As it disappears, that like last little bit, and desperately trying to hold on to it. You know, boy, that's a twist of the knife right there. If you've ever been through that, but a brilliant idea animation wise to have Mufasa appearing in the clouds.
I mean, they could have easily had him appear in the water when Simba was looking at it, but
it doesn't have the metaphorical resonance of looking up to the stars and seeing the dead kings of our past.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's great, and it's slightly more interesting animation-wise than creating, like, a constellation that suddenly looks like Mufasa or something else that they could have done with that.
Yeah. So, more words of wisdom from Rafiki, and Simba is going home. Yeah. Rafiki tells Nala, Timon, and Pumbaa that the king has returned. Nala informs the two of the situation with Scar and Simba, challenging him to be king. Nice little montage of Simba running through the very wastelands he was running from the last time, where Timon and Pumbaa found him. He's running home. And amazing he was able to know how to get home from being away from it that long.
Yeah, animals are just smarter than humans in that respect.
Yeah. No GPS. Simba did not need a GPS to find home. So, yeah, Simba returns to the Pride Lands to see for himself how dried up it is. Now Timon and Pumbaa join him, and they need to get past this group of hyenas that is blocking the way to Pride Rock. Live bait distraction. Dress in drag and do the hula. Luau!
This has always been one of my favorite scenes from The Lion King.
I wonder how many people were introduced to the concept of drag queens through Timon.
Well, I don't know, but Nathan Lane is a perfect thing for that, especially since he would do the Birdcage not long after this. But this, just as far as you want like comedy interlude, for my money as a kid, this was the comedy interlude of the movie. Not the fart jokes, It's a Small World was funny, the puns were just painful. Timon doing, like, the funny little hula rap was absolutely the greatest thing. Are you aching for some bacon? You know, like, yes. I do not like the way Pumbaa becomes when they find out Simba is the king.
He just grovels.
He immediately gravels. Yeah,
he gravels at his feet.
Timon, I like his reaction better, because he's like, yeah, whatever, he's still Simba. He's still just our buddy. And eventually he does kind of give a little bow of respect, but I don't think Timon ever decides that Simba really changes in his eyes because of the king idea.
Yeah.
But Pumbaa hears the word king and immediately is like, whatever, my liege, I will do anything. Please don't eat me, kind of thing. Which I hate. Oh, man, do I hate that. So I'm very much more with Timon in this. You go, Timon.
Yeah. Well, the distraction works, and Simba and Nala are able to sneak past and make it to Pride Rock. Ugh, I can talk. Nala goes to gather the lionesses, and Simba deals with Scar. Scar calls out Sarabi for not hunting, but there's nothing to hunt.
Boy, is that a great bit of animation. Yeah, Sarabi walking with her head held high through the hyenas.
Yeah, she has nothing. She has no shame. I mean, she has nothing to be ashamed about.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, hey, we did our job. We cannot do our job because you suck as a king.
Yeah.
Mufasa would have done better. And then the backhand slap that Scar gives Sarabi and telling him I'm 10 times the king that Mufasa is.
Like, which, how delusional do you have to be in your own narcissism? I mean, narcissism is already delusional to begin with, but how delusional do you have to be standing in the middle of an actual wasteland among starving populace screaming about how you're a better king than the king who fed his people for his entire life?
Well, he's the king, and I think, is this where we get the I'm the king and I can do whatever we want line?
Yeah.
Yeah, so like this is, I mean, it's the delusion of Scar. You know, he is the king, therefore he is the greatest king that ever succeeded. The Pride Lands will never be as bigly as it is under King Scar.
We are making the Pride Lands great again, people.
And yeah, Simba cannot stand it anymore. Just seeing his own mother just slap like that—that's like you don't mess with his mother. Scar surprises Simba is even alive. Oh, hell, another job you failed at, hyenas.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just...
But hey,
up.
Did you want to be a cactus butt to go after him? No.
I didn't want to be a no.
No, nobody wants to be a cactus butt. Let him run.
So, yeah, and then Scar just straight up insinuates Simba has a secret. You know, why don't you tell everybody, you know, who is responsible for Mufasa's death? And of course, as far as Simba is concerned, it was his fault. So he says, I'm responsible.
Yes, yeah, Scar and Frollo need to have a gaslighting championship because, boy, do they convince their respective
charges
of all of the wrong things.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess Frollo was correct that the world is cruel and people would treat Quasimodo badly to some extent. Whereas Scar is just outright lying. So I guess Scar wins the gaslight off.
So yeah, Scar is trying to walk in on Simba when Simba's backing off because Scar has the entire hyena pride behind him, just marching forward on him. And Simba kind of backpedals over the cliff of Pride Rock. Thunder strikes, causing a fire. Because you kind of need that. This is the climax of the movie. You need a big disaster to happen to kind of raise up the tension.
They do love their storms and fire.
Yeah.
Disney at the end of it. In Beauty and the Beast and in Little Mermaid, it is a storm. In Hunchback, it is the molten lead fire,
whatever
thing Baba going on there. Yeah, and in Lion King, they get both.
Yeah.
So.
And yeah, Scar is the mirror of the of that scene earlier in the movie, you know, and then he tells him, "This is my secret. I killed Mufasa," and then Simba just lunges at him, and makes Scar tell everyone the truth that he killed Mufasa. And the moment Scar says it, the hyenas attack Simba. Then here comes the lionesses, and the lionesses attack the hyenas. It's an all-out brawl between hyenas and lionesses. Timon and Pumbaa join in. Rafiki joins in.
Boy, Timon and Pumbaa, once again, great scene. Running into the cave there.
Yeah, Timon runs into the cave. There's Zazu still in prison.
Let me out! Let me out! Let me in!
And now for the references only the parents in 1994 would get.
Yeah.
References to Taxi Driver and In the Heat of the Night.
Yeah. Because movies that no kid in 1994 should have ever seen. And yet I knew both of the references, having seen neither movie.
Are you talking to me? Are you talking to me? They call me Mr. Pig.
Yeah. So, yeah.
At least I'll...
Great scene. I love it.
Yeah, you don't see what happened after that. But you actually hear Rowan Atkinson as Zazu saying, take that, take that. So at least I assume Zazu got a few licks in. You don't see it, but I assume he does.
No, Zazu seems like the sort of douche that would stand beside the fight being like, yeah, punch him, punch him. And then as soon as the bully got the other hand, be like, rah, rah, go bully.
Well, at least Zazu's free. He got out of the chain. Yeah. And then, again, another reference, the Arsenio Hall dog bark.
Yeah, which I think more kids at the time would have known. Yeah. Even though that was an adult show, that was such a huge part of the culture at the time, that you would have known it even if you hadn't been allowed to stay up late enough to see that show.
Arsenio Hall was popular, man.
Yeah, Arsenio Hall was absolutely the biggest thing on TV at the time.
But it does date the movie, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But it's only the one reference, so we can slide past that. So Simba has Scar cornered now. Scar says it's the hyenas that are the real enemy, and it was all their idea. So Simba tells Scar to run away, just run away, never return, because hey, that's what he told, you know, that whole history thing. And Scar just swipes some burning debris from the ground and throws it in Simba's face, and we get the fight between Simba and Scar, and it's not a very action-y fight, but it is very much like real lions would fight.
Yeah, and all in slow motion.
Yeah, they're on the hind legs. They're slapping each other. It's just, yeah, and the slow motion and the score help a lot, and the booms they give to each slap.
Yeah.
Scar's slap knocks down Simba. He lunges at him, and Simba with the counter, throwing Scar over the ledge of Pride Rock.
And Scar goes over the top rope and outside the ring.
So that is absolutely,
we both know how much of a wrestling ending that is.
That is.
You know, out to the outside of the ring where, you know, there is the dramatic beat down on the outside of the ring. When your own crew turns on you, you know.
Yeah, I'm getting to that. Scar gets up. Yeah. He's met with the hyenas, and they heard what Scar said. This partnership is over. This team no longer exists. And the hyenas all pile on Scar and eat him.
And
he dead.
Yeah. This is probably the most gruesome death that any Disney villain really gets.
It would have been more humane if he had been thrown into the fire.
Yeah, it's like you kind of, even somebody as disgusting as Scar, you kind of like, ooh, I wish that fall would have killed him. You know, that would have been a much kinder death. Also, this is Ed's shining moment, Ed the Hyena.
Yeah.
You know, because
another moment with Jim Cummings doing that evil, that this is almost like a Joker style laugh, the way what he's doing.
Yeah, it's because Ed has been the kind of just goofy sidekick for the entire movie. He's been the butt of the joke, and then when they turn around and they go Ed, and he just starts evilly laughing and advancing on Scar, and like even as an adult, that kind of makes your blood run cold. You're like, wow.
If Jim Cummings never played the Joker, it was a crime.
Yeah, I don't think he ever did. I don't know that he did, but he's done so much. I hesitate to say for sure.
So there actually is an alternate ending that for this scene that it's not on Disney Plus, but it's on one of the DVDs, that where Scar actually wins the fight. Scar, it's the reverse. It's Simba slap knocks down Scar, and Scar is the one with the counter throwing Simba out. And then afterwards, he's laughing and laughing that he's won. He is the true king, while all of Pride Rocks is on fire and engulfs him, and he gets burned to death. So much, this might be a better ending.
Yeah. It does seem that Jim Cummings did play one of, it looks like one of Joker's henchmen. Yeah. No. A party clown that was involved in a Joker plot, it does seem, in Batman the Animated Series. But he never actually did the Joker.
That's a crime.
It is a crime if Mark Hamill ever needs to step aside for some reason. Jim Cummings needs to do the Joker.
Yeah. So then at the end, it starts to rain and puts up the fire. And Simba walks up to the cliff of Pride Rock and roars and takes his place as the rightful king. Go ahead, Kiki.
Okay. I'm not sure if there are zero lion roars, but there are definitely fewer lion roars than you think there are. Because pretty much every lion roar in the movie was provided by, say it with me now, gang,
Frank Welker.
Okay, so Disney did get a lot of footage and audio of lions and other wildlife for the movie. They've been doing this since Bambi, where they will actually have a lot of reference footage, or when it is safe for the animators to be in the room with the animals, they will bring in animals and let the animators, you know, watch them up close. But what they discovered is that lion roars, although very kind of powerful if you hear them in the wild, don't quite record as well as you would hope. And they were trying a lot of tricks and stuff like that. And then I guess what happened with somebody at Disney was like, hey, what about that guy we always get that does all the animals things? And, so they got Frank Welker in, and Frank Welker provided most of the roars by roaring into a giant plastic trash can.
It was a metal trash can. I saw that footage. It was a metal trash can.
Oh, it looked plastic in all the things I saw, but that's
looks like a metal. Well,
my faulty memory.
The point is the famous roar at the end where Simba roars. That's Frank Welker.
Yeah.
But uncredited. Does not get a credit in this movie, and it's a shame.
Yeah, but they used his roars extensively. Through that, and there is amazing footage and you know, pictures and things like that of Frank Welker standing at a microphone holding a giant trash can roaring his heart out, and bless him for it. That is probably my favorite voice actor story in all of history.
Yeah,
is Frank Welker just standing in a booth. And then recently, Alan Tudyk. There is footage of Alan Tudyk doing the chicken in Moana. And he's just clucking and, you know, crowing his heart out. And then he stops and he looks at the camera and says, I went to Juilliard for this. Which, you know, it's so great. But I respect the hell out of any voice actor who does that sort of thing, because they make our lives so much better in doing it. And they have all my respect.
So, yes, the Pride Lands are once again green and full of life. I'm not sure how that transition happened from magic, the magic of the roar, apparently.
No, it is that we should all bow to the rightful ruler, which is decided by who happens to be born at the right time to the right people.
Apparently.
Sorry. I love Disney, but they need to get away from royalty.
Yeah.
The I like that they let's go ahead and talk about the end of the movie.
Yeah, so Fire Last Bowl of Life, in a scene that mirrors the opening scene, Simba and Nala welcome their own cub into the world. It's lifted up just like it was in the beginning of the movie. Circle of Life complete. Boom. Title.
Yeah, and this is it's a great way to end the movie.
Yeah.
Once again, that song, you can't hate it when you hear it. It is a showstopper. The title card with the, you know, loud drum beat. Mm-hmm.
Again, it's perfectly mirrors the beginning of the movie.
And it's the circle of film, you know, it's the circle of narrative. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Which I like. The Lion King as a Cardassian repetitive epic. Please submit your papers now. I also have the same theory about Star Wars, which I'm sure we will get to whenever we talk about Star Wars.
Yeah.
The idea of the repetitive epic of the generations repeating the same story over and over again. The only good thing is that, as far as we know, Simba doesn't have a brother. So.
No. Again, there's two more movies of this, so we could go through it at a future date.
Yeah.
It's one of the favorite things I love about the Back to the Future trilogy is how many times they repeat those moments.
Yeah. It when done well, the repetition of tropes can be very effective.
Yeah. So, does this movie hold up?
Absolutely.
I think so.
Freaking-lutely it does, yeah. With the exception of the way that you view Simba as a child changing. I think that pretty much any adult who isn't an absolutely narcissistic bully will view that scene much differently as an adult than they did as a child. The interesting thing is that I find some of the morals of the movie interesting in that respect, in a way that I didn't get as a child. Which is if I can borrow kind of a line from another Jeremy Irons part, his character in the Watchmen TV show, no spoilers, makes a statement at one point that anybody who wants absolute power is the person who should never be allowed to have it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what they were going for with Simba. Scar had the idea of, I want absolute power at any cost, and that is why he should not have been allowed to have it. Simba, at the beginning of the movie, also should not have been allowed to succeed to the kingship. Mm-hmm. Simba had to go through enough of his life where he realized that there was more to life than that, and that having, you know, absolute control over something was not really a thing to be desired. That leadership is a responsibility. It's not necessarily a privilege in what it can give you.
Simba needed some kind of humbling experience.
Yeah. He absolutely was the rich kid that needed somebody to teach him what life was like.
And he kind of did get it. You know, he had to live essentially a humble existence for most of his life.
Yeah.
And so he probably would not have been ready to be the king unless he had that life happen to him.
Yeah, and this is very much, I mean, you know, this comes up a lot in stories about royalty. I mean, this is the Prince and the Pauper all over again. Mm-hmm. The privileged needing to see how the other half lives in order to get some perspective on life. And I think it is absolutely the moral that you should take away from this story, if anything. Mm-hmm. That and the thing about the past can hurt, but, you know. But that, you know, maybe it comes down to that, you know, other Jeremy Irons quote. You know, anybody that wants power that badly should not be allowed to have it, because they will not have anybody's best interests but their own. And yeah. I think Simba is a great way of teaching that to children. I think Disney could have done it a little bit better. I'm not sure it completely comes across, because I'm not sure I got it as a kid in quite so clear a way as I did when I got a little bit older. But I do think that it's there, and I think, especially if you're a parent and you're watching this with your child, mm-hmm. I think that that is a discussion that you should have. Would Simba have been a good king if he had become king as a kid right after Mufasa died?
What if, and again, Scar is still there. Now he has, what if he grew up with that influence of Scar?
Yeah. You know, are the things that he wants in I Just Can't Wait to Be King? You know, I'm brushing up on looking down. I don't want to have to take any advice from little hornbills, you know. I mean,
and in
are these laudable goals? You know, you should be talking about that with your children, I think, when you're watching movies like this.
I mean, if Simba had become king straight away, he would have been Scar.
He would have absolutely been Scar, but he would have had the one thing Scar didn't have, which would be the raw power. You know, he doesn't grow up to be kind of as big and muscular as Mufasa, probably because he's been eating bugs for his entire adolescence, Timon. Yep. But he absolutely does have more physical power. And also the backing of the lionesses, yep. which Scar never had. So, yeah, I think Simba becoming king at that point in time absolutely would have been a far worse in some ways, because there would have been, I'm not saying there wouldn't have been anybody to depose him, but kind of, yeah. There wouldn't have been anybody to depose him. You know, what are they going to do? You yeah. know, who are they going to fall back on? And as much as I would like to see, like, a democratic populist uprising in the Pride Lands, you know, that's not going to work in lion society.
No, it's not. It's not. So I think that's all we can say about The Lion King. Again,
yeah.
If you have the choice, I'm going to say this right now. If you have the choice between watching the original animated film or the live action film, I definitely would recommend the animated film. Even if I have never seen the live action movie, I'm still going to say watch the animated film. You know, if you have Disney Plus, watch it. Digital, whatever. The animated movie is a classic. It should be watched over and over and over again. And again, talk with your kids about the lessons in here, you know, about the past, about yeah. about selfishness, because, you know, Simba was a very selfish kid. He wanted what yeah. he wanted, and he didn't care, because really he was the spoiled rich kid, like you said.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, we don't really say it in every one of these things, but if you have kids, you should absolutely be watching movies alongside of them and talking about what the movies, what the shows, what the songs they're listening to is actually telling them. Teach
TV
them
is not
to
a
think about it.
The TV yeah, is not a babysitter.
Them, yeah, teach them to think about it critically. You know, teach them to question it. And you should be doing the same with your own media, even as an adult.
Yep.
That is kind of one of the things we're here for, I think, in this podcast.
Trying.
Not only rewatching to see if it's entertaining, but rewatching to see what we were taught as kids. Was that a good thing or a bad thing? You know, how did it shape us? And you should absolutely be doing the same thing with your kids now, but proactively.
Yeah. So let's move on to the next episode. We talked about it earlier, but Pocahontas is the next movie that came out after Lion King. It was a movie that was worked on at the same time as The Lion King. And next week, we will go to colonial United States and see Pocahontas and Mel Gibson. And yeah.
Oh, there's so much we're going to have to talk about.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one.
Oh.
Yeah, you forgot Mel Gibson was in that movie, didn't you?
I had tried to wipe that from my memory. But honestly, if you think we've been getting political before, there is no way not to get political with Pocahontas. Everything about it is just steeped in politics. So
let's save all of that for next time.
Yeah.
So for now, again, if you have your own opinions on Lion King or Pocahontas, please leave us a reply.
Yeah, absolutely. Our social media is always open to anybody. We want to hear what you're thinking about the show. If you have any kind of requests, things that you like, things that you wish we could do better, you know, whatever.
Yeah, we're always open to requests. If there's a movie you think that we should cover on the show, let us know, and we will eventually get to it, you know. Right now we're going through the Renaissance, but once we're done with the Renaissance, it's fair game.
Yeah, we haven't really planned beyond that, so whatever you want to hear.
We're running out of Renaissance movies.
Yeah, you better get those requests in fast, because we're running out of stuff for Renaissance.
So I guess that's all we can say right now. Again, we'll talk to you all next time, when we'll talk about Pocahontas. Oh, boy.
Be prepared.
Be prepared. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Rewatching the Magic. We invite you to keep the magic going by joining the conversation online. Find us on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic, on Twitter at Rewatch the Magic, and of course, find all new episodes at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com. Until next time, remember, the magic is for everyone. It only stops if you let it.